Well, good morning. How are we doing today? A little better than last week. Last week it was like, it was so quiet when I asked that last time. Before we get into today's sermon, I wanted to give us the opportunity to hear about some activity that our church has been involved in. And so, Joel, if you could come on up, we wanted to hear about what we did. Will this microphone work for Joel, this one right here? Got to turn it back on. Red button. There you go, Joel. So, Joel, you led a team to go down to the coast area. And how about you tell us a little bit about what you guys did? This is involving the hurricane, the hurricanes that came through, and we did some work down there. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about what we did.
We've been in touch with Bayshore Church, who is in conjunctions with, do you remember the name of the other?
I don't remember the other church. Yeah, Bayshore is the church that we're connected with. They're also in the EFCA, the same denomination as we are. And so we got connected with Bayshore, and they have some connections down.
There's a group out of Minnesota that has come down to oversee all of it. It's all volunteer. I talked with them last week and the week prior. Excuse me. Finally got down there on Friday and met with them in person, and they gave us some addresses to go to. We actually went to Rockport. It's a mess down there. If you haven't seen it, it's hard to describe. It's a terrible mess. I told them that we had access to a skid loader, so they sent us to Rockport to do work with the skid loader. We plan on going back. I don't know when they're going to be through, 2 or 3 years probably. We didn't get to all the places they sent us to. It was a pretty big job that we started at. It was hot down there. For some of y'all, I was forced to drive the air-conditioned Bobcat all day. It's not
sacrifice.
Funny.
Sacrifice.
It's not funny because I had to get out a couple of times because it gets cold in there. But I survived. We want to go back. Truth be known, they were telling me this the very first time I talked to them. Houston had that other hurricane. That's all the news would talk about was Houston. They were so afraid that all the volunteers were going to leave and go to Houston, and that's exactly what's happened. There's very few people down there. For a few weeks, there was all kind of different organizations down preparing meals for the people that live there, for the volunteers. Just they were flooded with help. Now they're gone. We didn't see anybody. We saw a few pickups and stuff that looked like there were some down there trying to help, but it's nothing like the devastation that's there. We want to go back, and I can talk with them and explain to them we've got maybe several people that can go, send the skid loader over here and do that kind of work. If you have something that is not so strenuous, give some other people some stuff like that where we can do more than one thing at a time. They're so thankful that we came. I called them and I said we're finished, but we didn't get it all, and they were like, don't worry about that. Just thank you so for coming, and if you can come back, great. If you can't, we thank you so much for coming this weekend. So I guess if we could, if y'all get a hold of me and let's figure out what we can do and can't do and go, you know, offer our services again, more than just one time. We did, they weren't on the list. They were the sweetest couple that were next door to where we were working. they were old and out of shape, like Randy there. And, their fence had blown over as a privacy fence, and they were out there trying to stand that fence up. So we were able to help them set a couple of posts and get that fence put back up. And they were so thankful. They were just, it makes you happy for them that we happened to come by. They have asked for no help. And, of course, we had a skid loader, and they had four big old trees in their front yard that had fallen down, and they didn't know how they were ever going to get those out. And we told them, watch this. Here we go. And in no time, they were just picked up and hauled out.
But I'm so glad I asked you to come up and talk about this. I'm so glad I asked you to come up and talk about this. So here's a few other pieces of information. EFCA, that's the denomination that we're with, the Evangelical Free Church of America. They have an arm that is with that does the missions stuff internationally and locally here. So we have connected with the Reach Global is their name. Reach Global is the name of the arm of the EFCA of our denomination. So that's who we've been connected with. That's who we've been talking with. I just had a meeting. Several of the other EFCA pastors in the San Antonio area get together every once in a while. We just had a meeting this last week, and we heard about what they're all doing in Reach Global and how they're working. They've got a ton of work to do down in Houston as well. They've got a ton of work, as you've heard, down in the Rockport, Port Aransas area. There's just a ton to do, and they need as much help as they can possibly get. And so we want to be able to produce and provide help for a long time. This is going to be, like you said, a 2-3 year process of cleaning up all that got devastated with this hurricane. And as they were talking about this week, and as you mentioned, everybody comes in when the hurricane first comes, and they're all excited about it. But as soon as the media goes away, it's really hard for them to get help anymore. And all of that just kind of washes away, and this community is still left devastated, and it takes forever for them to rebuild. So we want to be able to partner with Bayshore and with Reach Global to help out for the long haul. So we want to be able to produce as many trips as we can possibly get. If we can do it once a month, great. If we can do it twice a month, great. If we can do it more than that, that'd be excellent. So if you are at all interested in doing anything at any time, please contact Joel and let him know what your availability is, what you'd like to do, if you have any special skills. I was talking to them, and they said, yeah, special skills are great, but really we need unskilled people that can just come and do. There's so much to do that, feel free to come, even if you don't know how to drive the Bobcat and suffer through the cold air conditioning. We can still use you. So can you give us an idea, 2 to 3 years, like what were some things that you saw down there? What does it look like? Some images that stand out in your mind that could give them an idea of what the condition is down there.
There will be a house here, and then on either side, the houses are gone. Yesterday, where we were working across the road, they had condemned everything over there. They forced those people out. Those homes there, I don't know. The lady told me she doesn't know what they're going to do. Mm. Bulldoze them down. Don't know, but they ask them not to go. So, yeah, one minute you've got your home, and 12 hours later you have no home, you have no clothes, you have no car, you have nothing. I don't know where. Some of those people were kind of wandering around there a little bit, but for the most part they were gone.
Yeah,
and I don't know where they are. The ones that I asked, they didn't know where they'd gone either.
Yeah, wow. What would be some different things that we would be able to contribute and do down there? What would be some activities that we could help out with?
Well, that is where the Global Reach.
Yep.
They are out there in the field. Mm. They gave us some papers yesterday to pass around. If we saw someone that looked like needed some help, we gave them the paper. They would fill it out. Right? You gave it to that couple. They'll turn it, or we'll turn it in. Do you have it? I'll email it. Or. Okay. Yeah. So they'll call them and tell them, look, this is what I need.
Yeah.
And they'll send somebody that way. The list that we got was one that they put together right after the hurricane. It's been, what, over a month?
Yeah.
We were the first people to go there.
Yeah.
That they're way behind.
They're way behind, yeah. That sounds like a lot needs to happen. Yeah, Sarah sent me a photo. It's of a business, and right next to the business is a boat leaning. There's no water anywhere nearby, and there's a boat just right there on this intersection, right next to this business. And just total devastation down there. This is a great opportunity for us to represent who Christ is. He is a God who loves, who brings back and restores, and cares for people. And so we want to be able to give that love out. And so we definitely want to commit to doing more. So we're going to need your help. We're going to need your commitment. We're going to need you and your availability to be able to give us some time and to go down there and give some help. So also, if you have friends, they're not opposed to us bringing people that aren't believers. So if you have friends that you're talking to and you're saying, hey, we just went down, checked things out, and it's a mess, and we could use as much help. If you have people that just in the community that don't go to this church, go to another church, they don't go to church at all, whatever, we can use them and we can partner with them. And we feel that is a strategic way for us to reach out also to people that don't go to church, for them to come work with us, see how we love people, see how we're committed, see how even though we're a small church, we're doing incredible stuff. And so definitely think about that. And again, direct them to Joel if you come across anyone, or if you're interested as well. Any final thoughts on that, Joel?
No, just what you said. If you have friends, anybody that shows any desire to help in any way, there's something for everybody to do down there. So they don't have to feel like, well, I can't do this, can't do that. There's plenty to do for everyone.
Excellent. Do you mind praying for the people impacted, both there and in Houston and in Florida and in the Caribbean with all these different hurricanes that are hitting? Do you mind praying for them?
Lord, as we come to you today, after we've seen the devastation and the losses from so many people, we thank you for the lives you spared down there. We thank you for allowing us the opportunity and the will to go down and help those people. Father, we ask that more opportunity come our way. More of us are freed up to be able to go down and help your people try to bring their lives back together. We also ask that we have the opportunity to share your word with these people and show them that we are God's people down there helping them. We ask this in Jesus' precious holy name. Amen.
All right, well, we will get into our sermon now. We are in the book of James, and we are finishing up chapter 3 today. Slow-moving sermon series, but we're making our way slowly but surely. We will finish up chapter 3 today, and a couple weeks ago, many of you know that my wife and I were at two different weddings, so we took some time, and we did a long road trip. We first went from here to California, And then we went back, backtracked a little bit, went to Phoenix. I had two buddies. I was a groomsman. In those weddings, many of you were appalled at the purple pants I had to wear and got a kick out of that last week. So this trip was a long trip. I don't know if any of you have tried to road trip to California before, but it takes a full day just to get to Phoenix from here. And then from Phoenix, you got another 6-7 hours to get to LA. And so with a long road trip like that, whenever you take a road trip, whether it's to California or somewhere else, wherever you want to go, it can be difficult, right? It's a long trip. Now, if you add a almost three-year-old, my daughter will be turning three on Tuesday. Happy birthday to her. We brought her along. And so you bring an almost three-year-old on a road trip like that, it's going to add some complications and some difficulties. So there's one thing that you need to think through very carefully when you take a road trip like that. And that is your company. You want to be with some good company if you're going to go on a long road trip like that. And if you're going with some bad company, it's not going to go well. I went with my wife and my daughter. My wife was tremendous company for me during that long trip. And it was so good, such a blessing, even with all the craziness and all the, like, oh my goodness, this is taking forever, for her to be with me, to get that time to be with her, to have a level of peace in the car in spite of the craziness. You want to be able to be at rest. You want to be in a tranquil environment, not one that is filled with strife and difficulty and or insults and things like that. You want to be at peace when you go on a road trip like that. We're going to use that image as kind of a backdrop for today's subject. So James has been talking about a bunch of stuff now that we're supposed to do, we're not supposed to do. So he started out chapter 2, he started talking about saying, we're not to show favoritism to anybody. We're not to show favoritism to anybody. No one gets special favors. And then he went on to finish chapter 2 talking about, well, let's not just say that we're going to do good stuff. Let's not just say that we are the right kind of person. Let's be the right kind of person. Let's actually do the things that God has called us to do. And then last week we talked about, early in chapter 3, that we're not supposed to watch the way we use our tongue. Be careful with how we speak. Be careful with what we say, because it can be deadly and dangerous if we misuse that. We can really damage people, really hurt people with those. Now, this section today, chapter 3, verses 13 through 18, this is the central section of the book. This is the pinnacle. This is the high. This is the center of all that he's talking about in this whole book. It summarizes and encapsulates everything that came before and everything that comes after. The thread that binds all of these different pieces and all these different sections together is this concept of peace and unity within the church. All of these commandments that he's given us, don't show favoritism, don't misuse your tongue, be nice to people, actually follow through with what you're called to do. All of these things are there so that we can have the goal, which is peace within the church. We can have unity, tranquility in our congregation. We can be at peace with each other, not fighting, not in conflict. That is the goal. That is the center of all that he's been talking about. So all these different things that he's called us to do are all aiming at, let's have peace in our midst. Let's have peace in our congregation. If we obey God's commands given through James, the result will be peace and harmony in our church. So with that said, that kind of introduction, let's look at the text. We are going to start chapter 3, verse 13, and go through verse 18. He writes this, "Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder in every evil thing. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. All of these other pieces, not showing favoritism, not just saying we were going to help people, but actually following through and doing it, guarding our speech and what we say, and all these other things that are come later on in the book, like resolving conflicts, not judging one another, the rich treating the poor fairly, all of these things James gives us, and he gives us these commands in order to champion peace in our midst, peace in our church. How do we achieve peace? We see it right there in the beginning. God's wisdom produces peace in the church. By following his plan and his commandments, we follow his wisdom, and we will have a church that exudes harmony, tranquility, love, and peace. Why is it so vital to God's people, to God's church, that we have peace? Why is it so important that we have peace in our church? This is really the dividing line between what God is and what he is not. So between God and his enemies is this subject. God created tranquility. We call it paradise. He created paradise. Think about the word paradise and all that that conveys. It conveys peace. It conveys tranquility, harmony, all of these wonderful things. That's how God intended things to be. That's how he wanted it. He wanted there to be peace. He wanted there to be love. He wanted there to be connection. And on the other side, we have Satan, and what he wanted was to destroy all of that. And so what has followed is a world that has fallen and is bent towards war and conflict and disunity, no peace. If we are to be followers of Christ, followers of God, the God who made peace, who is peace, then we ought to have the same as well. We have to emulate him, and that is one of our central characteristics. This is who we are. This is who we ought to be, people who are at peace with one another. We were at war with God, remember. Those that are sinners, which is all of us, are at war with God. We are God's enemies. That is what sin is to make yourself an enemy of God. All of us were that. And then Christ, in his generosity, came and offered us salvation. He offered to pay for all of our sins so that not just our sins are gone, but so that we could have peace with God. We're at war. We're conflicted with him. And then he offers to be at peace with him. That's what we're here for. That's what we're gathered for. That's what makes us a church, is that we have peace with God. God has given us that. That makes no sense then if we don't have peace in the church. This is why this is so central. This is central to our identity as Christians. This is central to our identity as the church, to be at peace with one another, to be able to forgive, to be able to work through conflict, to be able to be at peace with one another. This is who we are. This is what we're about. And if we're failing at this, we're really failing at really who we are. But if we're doing this, if we are peaceful amongst ourselves, we're showing the world what God is like. That's why this is so central and so important. Think back to the road trip image, right? If your companions are not up for peace and you're already on a long road trip, how's it going to go? It's not going to be fun, right? Okay, this life is difficult. We're already on a difficult road. This life is difficult. And if the place where we're supposed to be at peace, where we have joined ourselves together, the people in this church, if we're not at peace with each other, this is going to get even more difficult. So let's be at peace with one another. Let's find out from James what we ought to do to be at peace. We have a choice to make. Are we going to follow God's plan? Are we going to follow God's leading and his character and promote peace? Or will we go with our flesh, the flesh that desires to devour and to grab and to get what is mine, no matter what anyone else says or how they react? No, we need to be like Christ and seek peace. So let's look in more detail. We're going to dive into our text here now and see what he says. So verse 13, he says, starting out, "Who among you is wise and understanding?" Question. Who is wise and understanding? Again, James is talking about those who are wise and understanding. In chapter 1, he's done this multiple times. So in chapter 1, he talked about those who delude themselves because they think that merely hearing the word without doing what it says is enough for them, if you recall that. Or those who think of themselves as religious but are deluded, right? So there is this competition between, are you being wise or are you being unwise? And he's talked about this multiple times. Are you understanding? In chapter 2, he talks about others who are deluded because they claim to have faith without any works. Now he is asking, who thinks they are wise and understand the truth? All right, evidently, apparently, there's been a lot of people in this church or in the churches that he's talking to that are claiming, I have wisdom, I understand things, I know the truth. And he's saying, oh, you do? Fantastic. Prove it. Let's prove it. If you're really wise, if you really understand things, if you're really as smart as you're claiming to be, prove it. Let's see you prove it and back it up with what God has told us to be. Because if you are wise, you will be doing the things that God has called you to do. So, let him, this is now the same verse, let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. Okay, you want to say that you're wise? You want to think that you're understanding? Fantastic. Show it by your good behavior, your deeds, and the gentleness of wisdom. So, if you're looking at your life and you want to say, hey, do I have wisdom? Do I have understanding? These are the things that should be there. For the leaders in the church and those that have the role of shepherding and protecting our people, we need to be protecting ourselves from people that are not actually wise. And this is our test. Here it is. We're going to see by their good behavior, the deeds, and do they have the gentleness that accompanies wisdom. So the first two, good behavior and deeds, in this translation, the way they have that translated, they seem similar, but they're actually distinct, okay? So the good behavior in this context is talking about kind of your character, your lifestyle, like who you are. Is that good? Is that pure? Is that holy? And then the deeds are actually what flows from that, what comes from that, the actions, the individual actions that actually come from your lifestyle, who you are, what your heart is. If your heart is pure, those deeds come out pure. And then thirdly, this wisdom, the character and the deeds are all done in gentleness. What they do and who they are expresses love, tender love that is affectionate and caring. Wisdom here, he says, is gentle. It's gentle. Therefore, we can tell the fakes by seeing if the person claiming to be wise, claiming wisdom, lacks any of these three. If you're claiming to be wise, but you're lacking these three, that tells us something. If they lack the character and the way of life, or if they lack the deeds, or if they lack gentleness in the way that they do these things, then we know they are counterfeit, or perhaps at least they haven't grown into full maturity yet. In my opinion, I think perhaps the most telling of these is the gentleness, being gentle. You'll see a lot of people that walk through life and they have the deeds or they have the character, or at least what looks like it, what appears to be good deeds and good character. The Pharisees come to mind, right? There are a lot of social reasons and benefits for having good character and having a good lifestyle, or at least the appearance of that. And so it's very easy for maybe not very easy, but it's more easy to have those things. But gentleness, especially for men, gentleness is a difficult characteristic for men to say, yeah, I'm gentle. That's who I am. You want to know who I am? I'm a gentle person. It often exudes, you are not strong, you aren't a man, etc., etc. On top of that, it's also hard to fake. It's really hard to fake gentleness. So we're going to be able to tell, is someone being real by, are they gentle with people? Are they gentle? Do they care? Do they exude gentleness? See, gentleness takes an intentional motivation that comes from love. That's where it comes from. It is possible to have a strong desire to have a moral lifestyle and to do good deeds without truly loving the person you are serving. Jesus didn't just live morally, he loved deeply, and it was evident in his gentleness. Thus, for us to emulate Christ, we ought to share that same gentleness. When you love somebody, you are gentle. Okay, I love my wife. I'm gentle with my wife. When my daughter comes to me, I'm gentle. When my brother calls me and he's struggling with something, he has an issue that he's dealing with. Do you know what I am? I'm gentle. Because I love him. And I care for him. When he comes to me, I don't go, all right, man, you're a man, I'm a man, let's and just bulldoze over his struggles and all his difficulties. I don't do that. I'd be gentle with him. That's what love does. And that's what wisdom does. And then he goes on in verse 14. So now he's going to give the opposite of that. Verse 14, but if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. Notice again, as we have seen throughout this book, there is deception. He says, lie against the truth. He warns us to be genuine, right? We've talked about being genuine, this whole person, this mature person. Let's not just appear to be something that we're not. Let's actually be it. Let's not be deluded. So, here are some signs of counterfeit wisdom. Bitter jealousy and selfish ambition. Where these are present, the heart grows arrogant, and you fall into the trap of the lie. Bitter jealousy. Okay, we're not just talking about jealousy. We're talking about bitter jealousy, right? Like, this is deep jealousy. This is deep-seated jealousy towards someone else. This is the desire for something that someone else has. It could be material, but more often than not, it is something that's a little more intangible. And it's not just the desire for it. It's the craving for it. It's a lust for whatever this is that someone else has. It could be something less tangible, like a position or a rank or a status or a relationship or a reputation or a level of influence. There's any number of things that we could be jealous of each other for in the church. Could be material things. It could be, man, that guy's got a house that I would love, or a car, or whatever. Or Nigel's purple pants. I really want those. But I don't want to go out there and tell him that I want that because that's awkward. But it could be anything. It could be anything that you're jealous for. Thus, this bitter jealousy often accompanies a selfish ambition. There is something you want for yourself, some ambition. You haven't obtained it yet, but someone else has. Rather than being pleased for the other person, you are jealous. Okay, so it comes from, often starts with your own ambition, what you would want, what you would like. And then that brings about bitter jealousy. Note, this isn't a blanket opposition to ambition, all right? This isn't saying no ambition ever, ever, ever in any form. It's saying no. This is talking about specifically selfish ambition. Ambition for yourself, specifically to feed your flesh, what your flesh wants, what you sinfully want yourself. That's what this is talking about. This is not simply desiring one of those less tangible achievements or positions like power or influence, but desiring it for your own sake, your own pleasure, your own glory. That's evil, all right? That's sinful when you want these things for yourself. Now, ambition for the gospel, ambition to serve, ambition to bless other people, to be positive influence to other people, or even if your gifting is teaching, remember we talked about last time, those are positive ambitions we want to promote, and James is talking about. But if you want to do those things for your own sake, for your own glory, that is something we want to avoid. When we don't have those, we are promoting peace. When we have these, we are not promoting peace. And in fact, it says this. Here's James' assessment of this type of wisdom that brings about bitter jealousy and selfish ambition. He says this. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, demonic. Yikes. Does not come down from above, okay? So it doesn't come from God. It's not coming down from above. Where is it coming from? Rather, it comes from below, the earth, okay? Specifically from our fallen, wicked, sinful, evil nature, our flesh, which, as James points out, is really being manipulated behind the scenes by demons. He's saying this is coming from the demons. If you have this type of wisdom, quote unquote, and what that is producing is this ambition for yourself to get yourself higher, to glorify yourself, and then you also have this bitter jealousy towards other people, that's coming directly from Satan and his minions. Okay, the devil's crafty, folks. I don't know if you knew that. He's crafty. Some of his most useful minions are some of the most active in the church. You guys know that? Sometimes the people that are most useful to the devil are the ones that are the most active in the church. He simply has to switch the motivation for prestige and placement in the church going towards God or other people. All he has to do is take that motivation and switch it to yourself. And he has you, and you are acting for him. Greater levels of activity in church does not always correlate with greater righteousness. If someone is selfishly motivated, then the more active and involved they are in the church, the more damage they're capable of influencing. We want to be careful of that, right? This is not to say we're not supposed to be involved in church. Absolutely, we should be involved in church. But this is to dissuade us from improper motivation. We need to promote proper motivation that is there for the glory of God and to bring up other people and to bless them. All right? But you got to be careful. Have to be careful with this one, because it is possible to be very active in the church, but if your motivation is for yourself, you're causing problems. It's very easy to fall into. Think of the disciples. The night Jesus is betrayed, you know what the disciples are arguing amongst themselves? Which one of us is greatest? I'm the greatest because of this. Oh, I'm the greatest because of this. They're all arguing about who's the best. They literally thought, this was their mindset, all right? Jesus is talking about a kingdom. When you think of a kingdom back in that time, you think of Rome. They thought that Jesus was going to come and he was going to destroy Rome. So the picture that they had in their minds was, I'm going to be a prince in a kingdom bigger than Rome. That's going to put me about the status of Augustus, the Caesar. That's awesome. That's great. I want to be great. So I'm going to argue with everybody else and make sure that I'm up top, right? That was the way that they were thinking. These were people that were living with Jesus the whole these 3 years. They even had this idea. They even had this thought. They even had this temptation. So it's easy for us to fall into as well. We need to be careful about our selfish motivations. Jesus had to tell Peter, get behind me, Satan, because he had that motivation as well. If it's easy for them, it's easy for us. All right, verse 16. Tell us about what happens when we have this jealousy and selfish ambition. He says this, for where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every evil thing. Yikes. Jealousy and selfish ambition lead to disorder in every evil thing. Disorder, this is the opposite of the perfect, complete, mature that James has been talking about this entire book. It is a riot. It's uncontrolled. It's disjointed. The pieces of that, they don't fit into a whole. They're fractured. Our church will be fractured if we allow jealousy and selfish ambition to exist. When we abandon the wholeness that Christ has for us but cling to the disorder of our flesh, every evil thing, as James says, will enter our midst. Abandoning God's wisdom opens the floodgates to evil. If we abandon or neglect peace, we will pay the price. So that's the negative side. Let's get to the positive here. Here we go. Here he says in verse 17, positive. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. Here's our blueprint. This is how we know what peace looks like. This is how we know what God's wisdom produces. It produces this. So in contrast, God's wisdom from above as these things. So if we desire to be whole, mature, complete, we must deny our flesh and actively seek these principles. So number one, the first one on the list, pure. This is where it starts. Notice it's intentionally put there. James actually says, first, purity. Here's why. Righteousness, sanctification, the entirety of the Christian life begins with obedience. That's where it begins. That's where it starts. You have to start from being obedient to Christ. Doing good that he has called us to do and avoiding sin. When we obey, when we are righteous, we open the floodgates to God's Spirit to work and act. But it must start here. We can do the rest of the list, but if we are sinful and disobedient, the rest is meaningless. It doesn't matter. So next comes peaceable. Peace is the goal, as we've been saying before. The church must be a haven of peace. Man, the world is ravaging itself out there. Look at your friends out there. Look at the communities out there. It is eating itself alive. We need to be a haven of peace here. And once we've made peace in here, then we need to be able to go out into the community and make, not war, but make peace. Not just be peace, but we need to actually make peace. That's what we're called to do. Next on the list is gentle. We mentioned this as well earlier. Love is gentle with the objects of its affection. As I talked about my wife and my daughter, when I'm with them, I'm gentle. Likewise, we must be tender with each other. Tenderness is not a sign of weakness, but the proof of affection. I want all the guys to listen to that again, because this is difficult for you. Ladies, it's a little easier for you to be gentle. Guys, it's difficult. Listen to this one again. Tenderness is not a sign of weakness, but the proof of affection. Okay? So, if we are going to be a church that is peaceful men, we need to be gentle with each other and with the ladies in our midst. And that does not mean we're weak. That's actually strength. All right, so we need to be committed to that. Next one on the list is reasonable. This one's a little more nuanced and less straightforward. The translation is good, but it's connected to the idea of compliance and obedience, actually. And so the fuller sense of this passage is a willingness and openness to adopting another position, belief, or course of action. So the ability to be moldable for the needs of other people around us. We need to be able to adopt and switch what we're doing and accommodate the needs of other people. Next on the list, full of mercy. Recall James's declaration, right? Mercy triumphs over judgment. You remember that one? So good. That's who we need to be. Our mercy triumphs over judgment. God, in his infinite wisdom, determined that being merciful to us sinners brought him more glory than giving us what we deserve. Since we follow him, we must also be that merciful, not bringing judgment, even though it may even be deserved. This is wisdom, to be full of mercy, not just a little mercy, full of mercy, and then full of good works. Jesus didn't just come to earth, live this perfect life, suffer, die, be resurrected, leave, so that we would do nothing. That wasn't the plan, right? He didn't do all that. He didn't go through all of that just to see us sit here and do nothing. That's not the plan. That's not why he left us here. He left us here and didn't send us to heaven right away so that we would do works that show a dying and dead and dark world the truth. That's what we're supposed to do. We need to be full of these good works. So, hats off to those that went over the weekend and did some work down in the coast. Hats off to those that were doing good works here. Next, unwavering. This is the technical translation, and that's a good translation, but it really indicates that we ought to be tied to the truth, not wavering with lies or sin. But a better translation, given that James talks of this in other areas of the book would be not judgmental. We're not to be judgmental. That's a better translation of this. So we're not to be judging other people, and he's going to talk about that later in the book. So I'll leave for that later. And then without hypocrisy, we ought not to be hypocrites who say one thing but then do another. Let's be consistent. Another definition of this word is, hey, you guessed it, genuine. Man, he's talked about being genuine over and over and over again. Let's be people who are genuine and true and our faith to be real, not just something that's fake. Those that have these characteristics are wise and will fulfill what James says in our last verse, verse 18. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. So, righteousness is our fruit. Becoming like Christ. That's the fruit. That is what you plant something and then it sprouts and the harvest is the fruit. So, we are going to end as a church being righteous and being like Christ if we follow this path here. So, those churches that aim to live a righteous life must begin somewhere. Where do you begin here? Where do we begin? The seed that will sprout and produce righteousness must first be sown. For that seed to grow to maturity, completeness, wholeness, it must be sown in peace. Notice what he says. Sown in peace. The environment of discord, conflict, jealousy, selfishness, and war does not foster growth and righteousness. So, what that means is if we're trying to do what God has called us to do, and all around us, this whole context, the environment of our church is one of discord and conflict and really war and fighting with each other, we're not going to get anywhere. To gain righteousness, we have to have an environment that is peace. War is hostile to righteousness because it comes from the devil. That's where it comes from. Rather, for righteousness to grow, it must be in an environment of peace. So for us to fulfill what God has called us to do, we must cultivate an environment of peace in our church. James makes clear that the only ones who can do that are those who make peace. Peace doesn't come by accident. It doesn't just magically sprout up from the ground. It isn't a coincidence when a church has harmony among its members. The natural state of our flesh is war. No, peace must be made. It must be built. It can only be created by people who have given their lives over to Christ to build what he pleases. God created paradise in peace. He will recreate the heavens and the earth in peace in the age to come. And he can do it in our midst if we submit to him. This only comes through the sweat of obedience. It's not going to magically happen. We have to make it happen. And God has given us the authority and the ability and the strength through his spirit, through his power, through his word to do it. Next week, we're going to unveil the process for how we do this. God has given us through his word. Hey, how do you have peace? How do you do that? It talks about it in the next chapter. He talks about conflict, and we actually have concocted a way for you to go about having peace. So the elders have, I used to go to a church called Watermark Community Church up in Dallas. They took some information from a book called The Peacemakers, and they kind of took a bunch of that information and put it into a 3-page guide of how to have peace. We also then took that and condensed that. We're going to go through that next week. This is going to be the process by which we deal with conflict in this church. To have peace is not to ignore conflict. That's peace faking. We need to be peacemaking where we are actually making peace. When conflict arises, we are going to deal with it and resolve it. Okay? You resolve the peace. You don't just push it aside, ignore it. We're going to get through it. And that's what God has called us to do. It's very clearly stated in his word. It's very clearly stated here in James. So next week, we're going to go through that process. The elders have gone before you, all right? We're not doing anything. We haven't called. We're not calling you to do anything that we haven't done ourselves. So we've already looked through the process that we have. We've started to do conflict resolution amongst ourselves and with other people that we have conflict with. We've already started giving this out to the deacons and some of the other leaders. All right? So this is coming from the top down. We're all starting with this. We're all going to be doing conflict resolution. The leaders are leading the way. All right? And then we're going to be calling you to do what God has called you to do in your life with those that have conflict with you or you have conflict with them. Why do we want to do that? Peace in our church. That's why. This is the great haven from the world around us. The world is burning around us. And we need to be a place where people can come, where you can come, where your family can come, and they can find rest from all of that trash. But to do that, we need to build it. We need to work it. All right? When God talks about what's coming, he talks about peace coming back, being restored. The Old Testament alludes to the lion and the lamb being together and them not being in conflict. Even the animals will be at peace with each other. We will be at peace with one another. There will be no more issues. There will be no fighting. We're not going to fight. What's the fight over in heaven? We have everything that we want. One of the reasons we fight right now is we don't have. There's scarcity. We want certain things, and we can't have it, right? But in heaven, we're going to have everything. There's no need to fight. The enemy has been taken care of and destroyed. We're going to be at peace with one another. Every believer, all of their conflicts that they've ever gone through in this world will be resolved and taken care of. All the pain that you have felt from the conflicts with other people, Christ has paid for that. It's washed. It's over. It's taken care of. Anything that you want in return, reimbursement for that, retribution, you got it. Christ paid for it. And best of all, we're going to be at peace with God. All that fighting in yourself, the temptation that you feel, all of your flesh that is fighting against God and that we deserve to burn for, it's paid for by Christ. So we're going to be at peace with the Lord. We're going to be at peace with God. And so, in the meantime, we're going to be about peace, and we're going to build it. We're going to make it here. And we're going to tell the rest of the world that we have it, and we have it because Christ has given it to us. And that's what we're going to be about. So with that, let me pray, and then we will have our worship team come up, and we will have some announcements and then close out. Heavenly Father, I thank you so much, God, that you have given us peace with yourself. God, you earned peace for us through your Son's life. God, you gave us Christ. You gave us his life. You gave us his righteousness so that we could have peace with you, God. Now, may we please have peace with each other. I pray, God, that you would incite us to build this peace, God. I pray that you would give us the ability to do that, that your Spirit would infuse in us the desire and the ability to go and make peace amongst ourselves, to be able to forgive one another, to be able to work together to build this church the way you want it to be built for your glory and for your name, Lord. Thank you so much for the salvation that we have, for the people that we get to love now, that we are family. And we pray this all in your holy name. Amen.